Cape Talk.
WhatsApp 072-567-1567.
Well, it's time for the Sunday News Review. Business Day and Daily Maverick columnist Ishmael Lakhidin and correspondent Katie McDonald brings us up to speed with what's happening in the world. We go all the way to Pringle Bay first for Ishmael. Ishmael, a very good morning and welcome to Cape Talk on a Sunday morning.
Good morning to you. I was just listening to your talk there. Yeah, a study was done in the United States about 15 years ago, which came to the conclusion that a stay-at-home mother, her salary effectively amounts to $75,000 a year. That is how much. That is what much the labor value is. But so you know, people, we shouldn't underestimate that. Mm. But so it's, you know, one of the stories that I think that's really you know, gives us a bit of breather from the constant stream of stories on corruption this week is that the Sibanye silver mine Silverwater boss,
yeah,
Neil Froman, has defended his the salary. He's, you know,
it was a bonus, wasn't it? More than what it was a salary.
Yeah, it was like 300 million. $300 million remuneration for the 2021 financial year. It says remuneration, and he says the company will not be bullied into unsustainable wage demands. Now, I mean, the problem here is not, you know, look, it is a large amount of money, but it's the gap. The thing that bothers is a gap between, you know, what workers pay. But we must remember this thing has been running for a couple of months. Earlier this in March, I think it was, the trade union, National Union of Trade, National Union of Mine Workers, said that, you know, I don't know if it's fair, but to say, but they said that Froneman bought the Cook operations in South Africa and immediately took care of maintenance and resulted in considerable job losses and retrenchments. And then they make a sort of a veiled threat. They made a veiled threat. He said the if mine workers are deeply trapped in poverty, and if investors really want their processes, their systems to run smoothly, they'd better get rid of this guy. So that is a big story. The Sunday Times goes very big on that. Then deep into also the Sunday Times, there's a lovely piece by Mark Kafisa, who was the biographer of Thabo Mbeki. And he makes the claim that he asks the question whether Thabo Mbeki laid the table for state capture. And his logic, it doesn't seem outlandish. He argues that, you know, Mbeki himself may not have been corrupt, but it is his loyalty to the ANC's comrades that predisposed state institutions to Jacob Zuma's capture of the state. Now, this gets very close to the truth, I think. I believe it's because what the ANC is, we've come to learn, it's become a sort of a cronyism and patronage system where, you know, the deeper you are in the ANC, the deeper your pockets are, and the better your opportunities are for filling them. So there's some value, there's a lot of value in that. And, you know, because Mbeki has come out as a fierce critic of the Jacob Zuma Foundation during the ANC leadership battle of 2017. He said that the ANC has been captured by a dominant faction, which is in fact not ANC, which is, you know, kind of absurd to think that, you know, how can the ANC people who are not ANC capture the ANC? And so this is not a sort of a front page lead story. It's a rather one of the sort of insight opinion pieces, but it's very good. And Mark Kafisa is doing really, you know, is an excellent writer and journalist, and these biographies of Mbeki are quite exceptional. Mm. The other big story that caught my eye, the 4 o'clock this morning, was is the big city press leads with the big story that Ramaphosa is slowly starting to consolidate the ANC support base in the run-up to the leadership elections in December. But he faces major challenges from none other than Zweli Mkhize, who had to step down, we all remember, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, which is a heavy ANC province and very often victory in for the presidency or the leadership goes through KZN. So he has a battle on his hands, but the overall feeling from the ANC, what they call structures, is that Ramaphosa is gaining a lot of ground and he's consolidating his leadership. But we will have to wait and see for the coming weeks how this this battle runs out. And Lindiwe Sisulu is sort of falling out of the picture at the moment. So the two front runners, although Cyril Ramaphosa is clearly ahead, he has to go to KwaZulu-Natal, whereas Zweli Mkhize is that's his home state. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Those are the three main big stories that I think that caught my eye. And the Mark Officer inside piece, it makes for very good reading, and I think it makes a lot of sense as well.
Ismail Lakhidin, thank you so much for your insights this morning. And Ismail Lakhidin chatting to us. He is the Business Day and Daily Maverick columnist and presenter on the show from time to time. And obviously chatting to us about the big three stories, which is I deserve every cent of my 300 million rand. But then if you deserve it, then maybe you want to give your workers 1,000 rand a month more if you deserve the 300 million rand. And then did Thabo Mbeki actually lay the table for state capture? Very interesting article there, because I was chatting to Obi now. We seem to have a two-year gap between the election of the president of the ANC and the election of the president of the country, where, for instance, the president of the country is also the president of the ANC. And because we've got that two-year gap, we will always have the sort of presumable, I don't know, sort of the ousting of the president before the actual elections. And I think that is the idea behind that. Did Thabo Mbeki lay the table for state capture, you know, and getting rid of Thabo Mbeki at that particular time? But then obviously at that time, Julius Malema was in the ball, and of course, Valenzi Mavavi was also in the ball. So it's an interesting article to read up on. And then Ramaphosa consolidates the ANC support base, and that's the story that we were looking at with Ismail Lakhidin this morning.
You're with Cape Talk.
0214460567, and the WhatsApp line is open for your conversation. If you'd like to join the conversation on 0725671567. Good morning to you and welcome to Cape Talk. As Ismail indicated there, that in the United States, a stay-at-home mom's salary was calculated at $75,000 per year. Not a stay-at-home mom, but work very, very hard, is Katie McDonald. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Zane. How are you?
All good. It is race day, and you know what's nice about Cape Town is we always have these big sort of races that people run in and around Cape Town, the Two Oceans Comrades Marathon. We've got an APSA 10-kilometer run today, and a lot of things have actually come alive again in Cape Town in terms of events. But looking at your stories from down under, Katie, election news and antics are dominating, but there are sort of some serious underlying concerns about COVID. And what are those concerns?
Well, I think I mentioned to you last week that COVID numbers were sort of on the rise here. And essentially, last week, we had sort of one of the world's highest sort of daily infection rate numbers, and no one's talking about it. Look, it's obviously, you know, in the news to an extent if you choose to follow that kind of news, but the relevant experts are saying this is not good and numbers could just keep exploding. It's an issue. It is an issue. And I also mentioned to you last week, if I can remember correctly, that there are no really strict regulations. People are getting more and more relaxed here. And that, they think, is contributing to it. You've got these new variants that are spreading. People are not masking up on public transport, nor in supermarkets, shopping centres. Yes, there's COVID fatigue, and we get that. But that doesn't mean that you can sort of sit back and rest easily, because more and more people are getting infected. So on Friday, we had just under 54,600 cases reported. And the official seven-day average of that week was 48,000 daily cases. That is a huge number for Australia. So there are concerns that nothing is being done. And in amongst all of the election rhetoric, and I get that, because next weekend Australians go to the polls, and elections are always a big thing. And this is a biggie. It's going to be incredibly interesting. We've got a large number of independents standing. The polls are pointing to a Labor win, which would mean that the current government would not go back into power, but you cannot depend on polls. Interestingly enough, they're not talking about COVID. There are other issues at stake: cost of living, taxes, minimum wage. Absolutely, very important things. But none of the politicians are talking about COVID.
I think 2 years on, there's very little to ride on in terms of an electioneering campaign in terms of COVID. You know, there's very little extraction that you can actually get from going out there and sort of running on a COVID ticket, because you can't. 2 years ago, you could do it because it was the popular thing of the moment. So you'll have to look elsewhere for other topics and other priorities in the country if you actually want to run on a ticket for the election next week. But I think we'll be watching that. And I think just for the safety's sake, people need to, just for your own sake, you know, we had a big discussion about masks yesterday and whether, you know, the mask wearing is still on or not on, and people are unhappy. And, you know, it's just basically somebody said, my mask on my face stops you from getting what I've got. And that's as simple as that. So, you know, your mask on your face will stop me from getting what you've got in any case. 40 years after Ferdinand Marcos expelled from the Philippines, his son Ferdinand Jr. Claims a runaway victory for the presidency. We spoke about this last week, that the Marcoses are back in business.
Yep. Well, he was on track last week. The election happened. He's claimed a landslide victory. It's the highest sort of majority, I think, since his father was ousted. And yeah, it's interesting, Zane. I mean, there are so many underlying issues. And his father was thought to have stolen around $10 billion of Philippines money, or money from the coffers. And not all of that has been sort of, well, I don't even know if much of it has been found nor returned. You know, it was accused of corruption, oppression, all sorts of things. And now his son, he's a 64-year-old, he was a senator, congressman in governor, in the Philippines, and he's received more than double the votes of his nearest opponent. It's huge. It's interesting, though, too, because they've enacted a huge social media campaign, with a lot of the critics saying that they managed to sort of whitewash the family's history and a lot of the bad things that his father was accused of doing. And the young people who have been born since don't know. They have no memory. But there are a lot of people who are upset, more than upset, disgusted, disappointed. They feel that, you know, there was a huge lack of information. And, yeah, why are there all of these Marcos apologists? I mean, you get rid of the father for all sorts of reasons. And the son, who, is said to be not that different and was not that open with regards to what his policies are going to be, he's now in power. So it's going to be very interesting to see what he does do, how he does it, and if he manages to turn around that legacy that his father had. Or if, you know, people prefer a dictator that they know, in a way, rather than someone that they don't. He was up against a pretty well-known human rights lawyer. and he got in. So, yeah, quite bizarre, but yeah, we'll see. It's actually strange
that he's up against a human rights lawyer, which one would actually think that, you know, people would actually side with the human rights lawyer more than siding with an ex-dictator's son. And you don't know. But let's hope that the Philippines actually recovers from this and that, you know, he proves that he's not a chip of the old block, you know, and in the sense of the word there. Katie, another sad day for Australian cricket and for cricket fans in Australia as the legendary Andrew Simmons passes away.
No, just too sad. I'm sure you knew of him, and whether you support Australian cricket or not, he was a great cricketer and an incredible human being. And as I mentioned in my email, look, I'm not a cricket expert by any means, you know, Zane. The idea of sitting and watching a test over several days, I just can't concentrate on it.
Makes two of us.
But yeah, exactly. But Simmons was, you know, quite the Aussie larrikin. And very loved. He was an all-rounder, pretty mean with a bat. As they say, a tricky bowler. What that means, I'm not too sure. But he was only 46 years old, and he passed away in a car accident late last night. And it's been tough. Shane Warne, as you well know, we lost this year, Rod Marsh. And, yeah, it's just, it's sad to see anyone die. But this is kind of put a lot of people into shock and sadness, because he was a good bloke. He was a really good bloke and a great cricketer. So quite a few people mourning, lots and lots of posts and things being written about him, and just the sadness of the news, horrendous. But yeah, as I think I mentioned, he was a larrikin, and the Aussies love a larrikin. It's kind of typical of that Australian spirit. And, yeah, Cricket Australia and a lot of Aussies are in mourning today. So very, very sad news.
Katie McDonald chatting to us this morning all the way from Sydney. And we touched on the election in Australia. The fact that Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Has won a victory out in the Philippines. And, of course, the passing, very sad passing of Andrew Simmons, who died in a car crash at the age of 46. So, yeah, our thoughts and condolences with that family and with everybody out in Australia.